ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
दैवीभानार्युधासुरी प्रायुर्मायास्तु मे भारतुर्नान्या मेऽपि विहोमनि। Who is this mystic power and where has she come from? Is she a demigod or a demoness? She must be the illusory energy of my master, Lord Krishna. For who else can bewilder me? Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Balaram was surprised. This extraordinary show of affection, he thought, was something mystical, performed either by the demigods or some wonderful man. Otherwise, how could this wonderful change take place? This Maya might be some Rakshasi Maya, he thought. But how can a Rakshasi Maya have any influence upon me? This is not possible. Therefore, it must be the Maya of Krishna. He thus concluded that the mystical change must have been caused by Krishna, whom Balaram considered his worshipable personality of Godhead. He thought, it was arranged by Krishna, and even I could not check its mystic power. Thus, Balaram understood that all these boys and calves were only expansions of Krishna.
Iti sanchintya darasarho Vatsan sabayasan api sarvan achasta vaikuntam chakshusha vayunenasa.
Thinking in this way, Lord Balaram was able to see with the eye of transcendental knowledge all these calves and Krishna's friends were expansions of the form of Sri Krishna. Purport. Every individual is different. There are even differences between two brothers. Yet when Krishna expanded himself as the boys and the calves, each boy and each calf appeared in his own original feature with the same individual way of acting, the same tendencies, the same color, the same dress, and so on. For Krishna manifested himself with all these differences. This was Krishna's opulence. Who is this mystic power, and where has she come from? Is she a demigod or a demoness? She must be the illusory energy of my master, Lord Krishna, for who else can bewilder me?
Om Agyan Timidandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jenatasmoy Sri Guruve Namaha Vanchakalpatarubhyascha kripasindubhya eva cha patithanam bhavanibhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha ajanulambita bhujo kanakatavato sankirtanayaka pitaro kamalayatakso vishvambaro dvijabaro jugadharma palo vande jagat priyakaro karunavataro Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivashri Gaurabhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare.
Mm-hmm.
Sri Balaramji, is herein questioning with his own supreme, all-pervading, all-knowing mind. What could be the source of this great mystic illusion that is all around him? Could it be a demigod? Or a demoness? She must be the illusory energy of my master, Lord Krishna, for who else can bewilder me? Mm-hmm. In fact, this sloka is very important because Balaram is here confirming that where we find a display of mysticism, this is not necessarily the work of God or even the work of a devotee of God. Balaramji is confirming that even a demoness, one who has ill motives, one who is exploitative, manipulative, for the only purpose of sense gratification, control, and power. Sometimes even such personalities can display incredible, wonderful, mystic powers. Or perhaps a demigod. Demigods generally are not pure devotees. They are mixed devotees. Jnanamishra, bhaktas, or karma-mishra bhaktas. That means devotees, but who are not unmotivated in their devotional service, but they are either tinged with mental speculation, or they are tinged with the desire to enjoy the fruits of their actions. Most demigods are in these categories, although there are some who are pure unalloyed devotees. But the karma of a demigod is generally one who has devotion to God, but also has a tremendous amount of desire for power, control, and sense enjoyment. But they want to enjoy all those things on the side, but at the same time serve Krishna in a wonderful way. Dharmasya hyapavaragasya naratataya upakaldrates. Krishna, it is explained in the Bhagavatam that when we perform our devotional service, we're going to get some results. We're going to get some, oftentimes, facilities. And the Bhagavatam kicks out all sub-religious principles. That means you have to not in any way, in any time, try to enjoy the facilities that Krishna gives you in your devotional service for your own personal selfish interests. But those who want to serve Krishna and want to get facilities from Krishna and enjoy them, but still continue on service, through heaps and heaps and heaps of piety, one can attain the position of a demigod. Demigods are not pure devotees, nor can you give you pure devotee if they are in the Jnanamishra Bhakta or Karmamishra Bhakta platform. But all of these great pious demigods, it is explained, they have tremendous, tremendous mystic power. They can fly, they can give benedictions, they can fulfill a person's material desires. They have all these great mystic cities. So unfortunately in this world today, if someone is able to display some mystic powers, they are considered to be God, or they are considered to be God's representative, or they are considered to be a pure devotee of God. But here Balaram completely refutes that this is not necessarily true. Sometimes people with mystic powers, we find, are really demoniac. Their desire is control and power over people's lives. The greatest sense gratification of all forms of sense gratification is the power to control other people's lives. That is far greater even than sex pleasure. In fact, it is a form of sex pleasure on a subtle platform. To be worshipped and to have control, to have power. And oftentimes, for the purpose of attaining this, demons and demonesses aspire through the mystic processes to attain great powers. We find Hiranyakashipu, we find Hiranyaksha, we find Ravana, we find Salva, we find Kamsa. Factually, in the scriptures, practically every demon that we read about has tremendous mystic powers to perform these types of miracles. It's not that all demons have these, but why in the scriptures practically every demon that we find in the pastimes of the Lord has tremendous mystic power? Because although there may be millions who don't, they're not very significant, so they're not really worthy of talking about in the scriptures. Every demon that came into Krishna's life, that Krishna slayed, he killed, had fabulous mystic powers. It's not that Keshi was a horse. Keshi was a rakshasa who took the form of a horse. Can you take the form of a horse? Aristasura took the form of a bull. Putana took the form of the goddess of fortune. In this way, Balaram is confirming that just like Putana appeared as the goddess of fortune, just like Ravana appeared as a sadhu, through our mystic powers, if someone has this desire, this thirst for power, control, and ultimately enjoyment that comes from it, and all types of material facilities, such a person oftentimes disguises himself very pious as your well-wisher. But that's not very surprising, because every cheater in this world appears as your well-wisher, even without any mystic powers. Huh? If you're on the street and someone wants to sell you something that's useless, they will say, oh, I really want to help you. I can see that you're having some problem. This will really help you. Huh? And they get your trust, and you give them their money, and then you never see them again, and then you're finished. Your money is gone, and so is he. Huh? This is the way of cheating. Any expert cheater knows the best way to cheat is to become someone's friend, get their trust, and then they're vulnerable to give anything to you, and then you can exploit. So demons and demonesses, they know this process very well, and they have great powers. And also we find sometimes very pious people have mystic powers. They're very philanthropic. They're very pious. They really genuinely want to help the condition of the world. They're good people, like demigods. And through their mystic powers, they heal the sick. Through their mystic powers, they make the lame walk. Through their mystic powers, they can end droughts. But any demigod could do that. That's a small thing for a demigod. What to speak of someone in this world who's hardly anything compared to a demigod. But if they're pious, sometimes they have attained mystic powers through previous births of mysticism or from various yogic processes? Yes. But none of these things have anything to do with pure devotional service. Because they are all still under the influence of the illusory energy of the Lord. They are still all under the influence of karma. And if you use your mystic powers for pious acts, or you use your mystic powers for impious acts, you're going to get a karmic reaction. It's still within the laws of material nature. Therefore, the acharyas, the real acharyas, those who are trying to bring us to the platform of pure devotional service, they don't want to entrap us in the obstacles of being attached to these activities which are still very much within the modes of material nature. They want to bring us beyond the laws of karma by teaching us unmotivated, uninterrupted, pure devotional service. Because the fact is that you can imagine how intoxicating it must be to have power. Power that nobody else has in this world around you. So even if you have the right intentions, pious intentions, and even if you're helping so many people in so many pious ways on the physical platform, it's almost an irresistible temptation to become very egoistic and proud when you can do what nobody else can do. And for this reason, Srila Rupa Goswami, he explains to us that if you want to attain pure devotional service, just forget about all these things. Anukulyena Krishnanushilanam Bhaktir Uttama. If you want Uttama Bhakti, real, pure Bhakti, then you have to kick out karma and you have to kick out jnana. Mystic powers are within the realm of karma. And speculation, speculative processes to try to understand what is beyond, is jnana. It is only by service, devotional service, Rupa Goswami explains, with a sincere heart, following the principles of the Guru Parampara, that we can attract the supreme mercy of Krishna. And when that mercy descends into our life, only can we truly understand and realize what is the constitutional position of the soul in its pure state, unalloyed devotion. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada used to tell us so much, this is not a cheap path. This is the real thing, the essence, the substance of all the shastras for people who want that. And people who want something else, they will go somewhere else. People who want phantasmagoria displays of entertainment, they will go. People who want to worship God according to their own intellectual process of what should be done and what not should be done. There are so many people, so many paths teaching this. But those who honestly and sincerely want to surrender to Krishna, that is what our Guru Parampara is giving. Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshai shami masucha. Krishna says, abandon all varieties of dharma, of religion, and just surrender to me. Why just surrender to Krishna? Because he is Yogeshwar. He is the master of all mystic powers. He is the possessor of all opulence. We are satisfied simply reading about his mysticism. If we're not satisfied reading about his mysticism, then we have to try to do it ourselves. But if we're completely and truly satisfied just hearing about Krishna's tremendous and infinite, incredible mystic powers, of which in the perfection of the mystic siddhic process, we can at the most be a tiny part and parcel of an exhibition of this power. We don't care about these tiny part and parcels. We want to put all of our conscious faith in the supreme of all yogis, Krishna, who can do anything, anytime, who can create universes simply by his exhalation, and who can annihilate billions and trillions of universes simply by his inhalation. This is Krishna. This is the type of yogi Krishna is. We may be able to produce some fruit, just like Srila Prabhupada said when he was a young man. It was not the season for a particular fruit, but somebody wanted a pomegranate. And the only place at the time that they were growing was Kabul. So a mystic yogi just reached his hand out and a pomegranate appeared in his hand. He said, "Here, I got this from Kabul." And they were sitting in Calcutta. What is the big thing? Huh? Fruit, pomegranate. So in this way, these things are not very significant to a devotee. Oh yes, this man has produced the pomegranate. He's wonderful. He's incredible. He's amazing. Did you see that? But Krishna, when he exhales, there's billions and trillions, unlimited, countless universes, not pomegranates, universes, coming out of every pore of his body. And when he inhales, they're finished, they're destroyed, they're gone. They're in his body again. That is Krishna. A devotee with faith by hearing about Krishna has no desire for any of these other things. His mind is fixed. This is my Lord. This is my goal. This is my love, Krishna. He is the supreme opulent one. And here Balaram is saying that he's taking the position of a very advanced soul here. He's saying, yes, demigods and demonesses, they can perform all these powers, but they can't fool me. Only Krishna can fool me. So a devotee should have this consciousness. Yes, demigods, demons, mystics, they could perform all these extraordinary shows, but a devotee is not fooled by these things. But Krishna, he is willing to be fooled by any time. Because we're surrendered to Krishna and only Krishna. This was Balaram's position. I'm surrendered only to Krishna, no one else. And Balaram's the original spiritual master, and Balaram here is teaching us through his words and through his thoughts the firm conviction and determination of one-pointedness that we must have, not to be diverted by anything or anyone else except pure devotional service to Krishna. Huh? Not to be diverted in our attention by all of these other mystic displays or all of these other presentations of the truth. And very important. In all parts of the world, especially in India, there are so many alternatives, so many fascinations, so many extraordinary demonstrations taking place in the name of God. And everything has its connection to God directly or indirectly. There are people who can speak in such a way to just fascinate one's minds. You've heard Prabhupada's tapes. He could have done that. He purposely spoke very simple. Very, very simple. He just wanted to for those who wanted the truth, he wanted to attract them. He didn't want to speak in all kinds of jugglering ways of words to just fascinate people's minds. Or as they say, he boggled my mind by his speech. Prabhupada didn't want to boggle our minds. Prabhupada wanted to insert the truth into our hearts. And he didn't want to distract us by mind-boggling, fascinating words. Huh? And there are others in the Western world too. People who really, they can heal sick people within a second. They can put magnificent shows of demonstration of mystic powers on. Balaramji is saying, they can fool everybody else, but they can't fool me. Only Krishna can fool me. Only Krishna do I take serious. Huh? So therefore, what is Krishna consciousness? And what is the path by which we can be vyavashayatma ka budhir ekeha kuru nandana bahusha ka hinantascha buddhaya vyavashayanam? Fixed in determination, one-pointed. We have to keep always Krishna as the goal. We are so much aspiring to immerse our consciousness in his name. We are so much aspiring to immerse our consciousness in his lila as it is being presented by our Gurudev. We are so much aspiring to immerse all of our consciousness in his service. We are so fixed in Krishna directly in this way, through the service of his servants, that we just don't care for anything else. Nothing else is important. We're not impressed by anything else. We're not attracted by anything else. We offer all respects to everything, everywhere. Demigods or demonesses, we'll offer our respects everywhere, but our mind is fixed with Krishna and only Krishna, and only Krishna's name, and only Krishna's lila, and only Krishna's service. Here, the original spiritual master, Sri Balaramji, is so beautifully revealing the supreme opulence of Krishna. It should be the only meditation, the only object of affection in our life. And of course, that may not be so now. But he should be the only aspiration to attain that state of consciousness in our life. Is there any questions? Yes?
While performing some devotional service, over a long period of time, you try to enjoy that particular service. It comes naturally without even thinking about it. So simultaneously, we perform devotional service as well as we try to enjoy it also. How we should develop the consciousness that our devotional service is unmotivated?
It is not that we should try not to enjoy our service, and at the same time, we don't try to enjoy our service. We just try to be enjoyed by Krishna through our service. And actually, by doing that, the supreme bliss will automatically, naturally come into your life. Huh? We don't try to resist that bliss, and we don't try to aspire for that bliss. It is just the natural consequence of devotional service, when it is, to the degree it is unmotivated. But you see, when facilities come, the tendency of the conditioned soul, the neophyte devotee, is to utilize those facilities for our own enjoyment, separate from the service of Krishna. I have my life, and I have my personal private life to enjoy, and I have my devotional life also, and I'll make a separation. these things are for me to enjoy and these things are for Krishna to enjoy. Huh? That's mixed devotional service. Pure devotee no longer has that separation. This is mine, this is for Krishna. He understands everything is for Krishna. Even my personal life, it's for Krishna. It's an open book for Krishna. Huh? We use it all for Krishna. And how to use it all for Krishna? The spiritual master personally trains us how to do like this. And gradually through purification, it becomes the natural awakening of the soul to not desire anything outside of what we can use for the pleasure of Krishna. Yes? For our
apart from Lord Shiva and Brahma, who are acharyas of the parampara, as pure devotees and mahajans, which are the other demigods which can be considered as pure devotees?
There are many millions of demigods. To enumerate them would be very difficult. But one for sure is Vayu. Madhvacharya was an incarnation of Vayu. This way, out of the millions and millions and millions, some are impossible. Sometimes Brahma is not even a demigod. Sometimes Krishna appears as Brahma. Huh?
What?
Yamaraj?
Because Ganesh is holding the feet of Vishnu on his head, is he considered as a pure devotee? Lord Ganesh.
But you see, this is why it is difficult to say. Because Yamaraj is a pure devotee, but Yamaraj is not always a pure devotee. Vidura was an incarnation of Yamaraj. That was his purity. Madhva was an incarnation of Ayu. Hanumanji was also an incarnation of Ayu. They were of the purest, highest sense. But it is not that the same Jivatma always is within that demigod's body. In every universe there is a Vayu and a Yamaraj. It's not that they are always pure devotees. Similarly, Brahma is not always a pure devotee. But in this particular universe, in this particular manifestation, we understand through the Shastra that for sure Yamaraj, Vayu, Brahma, Shankar is always pure devotee. Indra, from what we read about him, I don't want the rains to come any harder, so I better not talk about it so much, but Indra, the fact that he's always appearing in these most wonderful ways in Krishna's pastimes, he's a very exalted soul. Is there any other questions? We have explained this many times. Because he is the original servant of Krishna, and the spiritual master never claims to be God. He always appears in the role of a servant to assist the Leela of Krishna. He is the supreme personality of servitor Godhead, Balaram. He is Krishna, but in the role of a servant of Krishna. And in this way, he is showing the way of service to Krishna to all. And in the form of Lord Nityananda Prabhu, we find, as Balaram was always assisting the pastimes of Sri Krishna, Lord Nityananda was constantly bringing the whole world to the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya. So that is the position of Guru. In the service of the Lord, to aspire to bring the whole world into the loving pastimes of the Lord.
you.
Maharaji said about to control is one of our highest sense gratification. Like, we also have this tendency to be like, people should respect us. We have to be in a better position. Now, other sorts of sense gratification, if it is denied, is not painful that much. We can just overcome that. But why is it this very painful? Like, if we are not respected or our position is not denied, why is it so painful?
To be dishonored, Krishna says, is worse than death. That's what you're asking? Because it's like a plant. If you cut the top of a plant, it doesn't hurt it that much. But if you start pulling it from its roots, it hurts a lot. Huh? The false ego is the root of all of our material life. And if someone just, you know, other types of distress, physical distress, emotional distress, they are painful. But it's like just cutting at the branches of our material conditioning. Huh? But when someone starts causing pain to your ego, what they're doing is they're attacking the root, the very source of your whole material consciousness. That's why it's very painful. And similarly, when some physical pleasure is nice, it's like watering the leaves and the flowers. But when someone praises your ego, it's like putting sweet water on the root of your material conditioning. Huh? It's the subtlest aspect of our, it's the subtlest element of our material conditioning by which all our other material condition is growing out of. Huh? Therefore, Krishna says, to be dishonored is worse than death. Because to be dishonored is a blow to the ego. But then it is also said by the acharyas, die to live. What does that mean? Die to live means when your ego is crushed, your material consciousness is dead, then your spiritual life is revived. Are you afraid of death? Huh? Everyone's afraid of death, unless they're liberated souls. To give up the ego is complete death to material life. It's more painful than the death of the body. Huh? Because this bodily attachment is just a reflection. It's just a gross reflection of the ego, the false ego. So if we're so much attached and so much afraid that this body will die, what to speak of the very identity we have that's the cause of our identification with the body? Do you understand? Therefore, yes, dishonor is worse than death. But if you want to attain pure consciousness, you have to allow the ego to die, and it's painful, and it's very fearful. Huh? And that's why it's very hard to be humble. It's easy to be humble when everybody's nice to you. But the austerity of humility is to remain humble under all circumstances. But we have to learn from the guru how to be humble in different situations. But that's an austerity. And that austerity starves the ego. And when we act proudly, it feeds the ego. And in Krishna consciousness, our goal is to starve the ego till it becomes so weak that it dies. Die to live. We have to die to the egoistic pleasures of this world in order to live in the glory of God, in the eternal service of Krishna. Does that answer your question?
Maharaj, you said that our determination should be one-pointed, and especially in India, when there are so many other spiritual organizations, we should be very careful not to be misled.
Prabhupada used to say India is a marketplace of all sorts of spirituality. Everyone's selling their wares.
And we devotees, we are concerned only with
just
pure.
Like you have seen in the sweet shops, they put mirrors behind the jalebis and colored lights on them, and it's just, walking down the street. Poor sadhus are walking down the street, and all of a sudden, like that.
So we should be very careful, but at the same time, we also try to take some aspects of other organizations, like we have to dress very sober, in a sober manner. Some people, they cite the shlokas very nicely. So we also want to train our preachers to present the philosophy in a nice manner. So on one hand, we try to say that what we are doing is best, no matter how the way others put their philosophy. At the same time, we also want our organization to be in line with other organizations. The devotees should behave in a particular way. We should also try to learn Sanskrit in it, to make it more presentable. So how should we determine what is the exact approach? If we try to take some things from other organizations, if we say they dress nicely or they behave nicely, then...
What do you mean dress nicely?
In a very devotee-like way.
You already are dressed devotee-like way. The acharya's business, if he wants to take things from other traditions and present it in the pure siddhanta of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. But never a deviation from that. Sometimes in very superficial external aspects, we may, just like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, took certain external aspects for the purpose of preaching and integrated it. But he's an acharya. He had that empowered vision to do so. But the siddhanta of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings was never in the slightest way changed. In other words, what they were taking were not things for our own benefit. For our own benefit, what the previous acharyas have given are perfect and complete. We don't need anything. But for the purpose of presentation, the acharyas sometimes utilize things in this way. Does that answer your question? And also, there are certainly other movements that teach pure devotional service. It's not that we're sectarian and fanatical. If someone is teaching what is being spoken, no jnana or karma misha bhakta, if someone is actually teaching that, then we recognize it and we adore it and we respect it.
But we still have our path that we follow without deviation. Huh? And we may recognize that, and we may even quote that in so many occasions for presenting Krishna consciousness. So we don't want to be fanatics, we don't want to be sectarian, but we want to be faithful. Offer all respects to others, but be faithful to what Gurudev is giving us. And never deviate from that. Because when we start mixing, we don't know what we're mixing with. We don't have the experience and the realization. So therefore, without the authority and the sanction of Gurudev, we should not mix with anything intimately for absorbing knowledge except what Gurudev and Parampara is giving. As far as for presentation, we may take this and that, but as far as absorbing and learning and developing, we should only, with the experienced realization of Sri Gurudev's blessings, should we dare to seek inspiration elsewhere in that sense. Do you understand? We offer all respect. It's getting less. And if you think you have no ego, that means it's really there. Don't worry about testing. Just be the servant. Try to please Krishna. Huh? And how? By devotional service. By chanting the name, by hearing the holy glories of the Lord, by serving the Vaishnavas and serving the Guru. Gradually, if we do it in the spirit, you have to do it in the proper spirit, otherwise it's going to take a long, long time. We have to do it in the spirit of really trying to please the Vaishnavas, please our Guru, please Krishna by chanting his name, by rendering service, by hearing the Bhagavatam. Huh? We have to serve to please. We have to be willing to put ourselves last. Huh? And that is the process of starving the ego. We have to learn to stop defending ourselves. But to defend Guru and Krishna and other Vaishnavas, humility means to stand firm. Huh? If we simply follow the process of Krishna consciousness as it is given by Guru Parampara, very carefully, very sincerely, then gradually the ego becomes extinguished. But ultimately, it becomes purified to the real ego. Jivara Swarupoi Krishnara Nityadas, that we are the eternal servants of Sri Krishna. When a tiger is in the cage and you give it food, it's just strong, powerful, and because it knows it's going to get its food, it's going to get its meat, it's going to drink its blood. Therefore, it's very, very, but it appears peaceful because it's getting everything it wants, right? Now, what happens when you don't feed it on time? The tiger goes mad, he goes crazy, starts jumping and just roaring. And what happens when you don't feed it again the next day on time? He just starts jumping and pacing up and down, and he's just going wild with anger. But gradually, if you just stop feeding it, it gets weaker and weaker and weaker till it dies. Our ego is like a tiger. As long as our ego is being fully satisfied, our ego is very peaceful, very tame, huh? Very nice, but strong as ever. And as soon as we start starving it, as soon as we start not giving it what it wants, proper adoration, proper respect, proper enjoyment, the ego starts going wild. Starts flaring up like anything. We're just seeing it for what it is. So in Krishna consciousness, before the ego dies, first the ego starts going wild. Because it's not getting what it's conditioned to get. And the illusion is to think, oh, it needs something, let me give it. No, not like that. Let it die. Huh? Of course, that's for ourselves. It's not our position to kill other people's egos by insulting them. If you do that, then you'll go to hell. If you offend Vaishnavas, you should encourage them and praise the good qualities of all Vaishnavas. Because by doing that, you kill your own ego more than anything else. Because the ego wants all the respect and glory for oneself and for nobody else. If you want to kill your ego, if someone says anything good about you, say, no, 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 really, I'm just nothing. But this person, did you see what he did? Did you see what she did? They're wonderful devotees. To the degree you sincerely praise other Vaishnavas and find no faults in anybody else and expect nothing for yourself, to that degree your ego will, you're killing your ego, it'll die. It's hard to praise others. We want it for ourselves. That's why Mahaprabhu said, Amani Namana Dena Kirtaniya Sadahari. Amani Namana Dena means offer all respect, all glories, all praise to all others, and nothing for yourself. That is the process of bringing the ego down to its knees and ultimately to its death. Hare Krishna. Is there any other questions?
There are certain devotees, when they sometimes they flatter the devotees. So what?
Huh?
Sometimes devotees, they simply flatter other devotees. So what should we do? Yeah, they are flattering us sometimes. So what should we do? We should be disassociated with them.
Someone's flattering you?
Anand Vrindavan.
He's flattering you? He's not flattering. There's a difference between flattering and appreciating. Flattering is when you say something to someone because you want to exploit them for something. And appreciating is when you genuinely, with a humble heart, just want to express your love and appreciation. That you should do. Vaishnavas should express their appreciation for one another. That's not flattery. That's Krishna consciousness. Flattery means I'll tell you something, I don't really mean it, but I'm going to say it because once I get you on the hook of my flattery, then I can manipulate you like anything. Huh? Although maybe when he goes to the office in the stock market he does like that, but at the temple he's not doing like that. Sometimes for business purposes you have to flatter. But amongst Vaishnavas we do not flatter. Huh? A sincere expression of our appreciation for another devotee, to share that, is a rule of Vaishnava etiquette. And that's what will bring sweetness and love amongst each other when we learn how to do that. That is not flattery. Huh? Tat was so wonderful. Such a great soul. Yes?
You told about the boil being squeezed and hurt.
Huh?
We're telling him about the boil and yes. When we squeeze it, it hurts. Like, why there's a difference? Who is squeezing it? Like, it depends upon our relationship.
Krishna is squeezing it.
So he's squeezing it through anyone he can squeeze?
He's squeezing it through guru, through the sadhus, through your family members, Mother Premalila, through your children, through your competitors, through your friends,
Krishna is in everyone's heart, directing everyone's wanderings. And he could use anyone to squeeze the boil of your ego. But let them squeeze, let all that pus come out. Huh? And in return, as they're squeezing, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructs, express your appreciation for them. Huh? It's painful. It's not easy. To the degree it's not easy, to that degree, you need to do it. When it becomes natural, then we're really in a purified state.
Maharaj, you said like about a
Pridayanani.
About praising, sometimes we find that among Vaishnavas also, if you want to get someone's service done better, and that's also a motivation in, you know, getting him in good humor, and we feel it is actually for Guru's service, and that's the way to get him in good humor. So we praise, even though we actually don't feel, but we know it's important because that person will really contribute more or help more. So is that also motivated?
That is pure motivation. To encourage some, that is not praise, that is encouragement. To encourage someone to increase their devotional service is really the greatest service we can offer to our guru and the greatest service we can offer to the person involved. Just like there's that famous story when this one lady, it was in France, Srila Prabhupada was coming, but this lady, she was very vain. She was really on the bodily concept of life, really engrossed in the bodily concept of life. And you know, usually the better your body is, the more you become engrossed. So she had a very good body by karmic consequences. And she used to decorate herself with all cosmetics and all very expensive hair fashions and all very exotic dresses. And she was coming to the temple and she was actually taking serious Krishna conscious, and devotees were telling her, you're not this body. Oh yes, that sounds wonderful. So why don't you do something about not being your body? And they used to tell her she was in Maya. Why you have these hair fashions and why you all this? And she was actually insulted by them. And she decided, I'm never going to go back to that temple again. They're insulting me. But then she heard Prabhupada was coming. So she said, she hadn't been there for a while. She decided, I'm going to go one time just to see who this guru is that they were always talking about. But after I see him, I'm never going to go back again because these people are just rude and insulting to me. They don't like my body. Huh? It's the greatest insult. So she came, she walked in the room. Prabhupada knew what her consciousness was. Haribo, answering your question. So Srila Prabhupada looked at her, and the first thing he said after he was introduced, he says, oh, you are so beautiful today. Now, you think Prabhupada really meant it? You think this, the Prabhupada, who was the supreme Paramhamsa Sannyasi, was actually appreciating her physical beauty? Huh? He said, oh, your hair looks very nice. You are very beautiful today. He didn't mean it, but he meant another thing. He said it out of pure compassion and love. He meant that. He meant that I really want to bring you to Krishna. He was sincere. And when she said that, you know, all of her arguments, all of her anxieties, she was completely spellbound. She was shocked that the disciples are criticizing me, condemning me for the way I dress and look, and their guru is saying I'm beautiful. So she just fell in love with Prabhupada, that he could say such a thing. And she knew he didn't mean it. She knew he was just being kind, so kind, that the next day she came to the temple wearing a sari, with her hair braided back and no makeup. And she became a devotee. Huh? So, this is not flattery. This is not false praise. This is called compassion. To say something to a devotee to encourage him to engage in devotional service, whatever it may be, is the greatest service. It's the greatest expression of our humility. That answer your question?
You said that when we, to the extent we praise others sincerely, then to that extent our ego also diminishes. But actually, I find that it is quite easy to appreciate and to praise genuinely, because there are so many things to appreciate in other devotees. But at the same time, our desire to hear nice things about us continues. In fact, that goes in parallel. It doesn't diminish. Feel nice when people say nice things.
If when someone says nice things to you, you enjoy the love that is being expressed by that person, but you really don't feel you deserve it, then that is good. Just like when Ananda Vrindavan says something nice about Tattva. If Tattva thinks, yes, he has understood the glories of my transcendental nature, then he's going to be a very fallen soul. But if he's thinking, I'm just such a nothing, I'm such a useless devotee, but Ananda Vrindavan, he just has so much love and you just enjoy the expression of that love that devotee has, then that's how love amongst Vaishnavas grows. Devotees should appreciate each other and should express their love for another. And we should appreciate that love. But we don't take the compliment seriously. We take the love he's offering seriously. Huh? So if when someone says something nice about you, if you think, oh, how wonderful this devotee's love is, that's purifying. But if you think, yes, that devotee has understood how wonderful I am, then you should realize that you're very fallen. Huh? Any other questions? Yes? Okay.
Maharaj, you said there are demigods who are demigod also, and they are sense enjoyment also they are doing. Can you give few names?
What?
Few names you can give of demigod, those who are demigod and they are also doing sense enjoyment, etc.
No need. How will that help you to improve your own devotional service? We should ask questions that help to improve our own devotional service.